Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, December 26, 2017, and with me today I have Brian Chaffin, and I'm glad you're here, Brian.
Good to be here, man. Happy post-holidays.
Happy post-holidays.
Well, I guess we're like mid-holidays because we have New Year's coming up.
All right. Happy mid-holidays to you. I can totally roll with that. And Andrew Orr, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. It's great to have both of you here. And listeners, it's great to have you here as well. And I hope everyone had a great weekend. And we might as well just hop right into some news. So last week we had the whole internet explosion about Apple intentionally throttling iPhones. And the quick backstory is that Apple has been intentionally slowing down performance on specific models of iPhones when the batteries have reached a certain threshold, meaning they're worn out enough that if Apple wasn't taking measures to stop this from happening, your iPhone would randomly reboot. And what was happening was there would be a processor request that would spike the power needs, and it would require more power than the battery was capable of providing in that moment. So to fix that problem, Apple took those processor requests and then started spreading them out over multiple cycles. So with that happening, you don't get that power spike to the processor that would make the iPhone reboot. So this was a good thing. They went about it in a bad way, only in that they just never bothered to tell anyone what they were doing. But in the meantime, we now have experts that are chiming in and saying that the battery itself may not be... No, I'm saying that in the wrong way. The condition of a battery, the way an end user perceives it, is not the same as the way, say, a battery engineer would perceive it. And Andrew, you found some info on that. So fill us in, please.
Yeah. So I noticed a Reddit post the other day from a battery scientist, and he says that when you're using your iPhone and it starts to degrade after a while, so what one of us customers thinks is a healthy battery is different than what they think of it. So they say when a lithium-ion battery capacity falls to around, between 70% to 80%, mm-hmm. they consider that the battery's end of life.
Okay. And to me, as an average user, I could see where a lot of people would think 70 or 80% of a battery, that's still a lot of juice, must be okay. But mm-hmm. not so from battery designer standpoint.
Yeah. And he gave some specific causes of what could happen when a battery ages and gets damaged. And there are some specific things that could happen. If you run into an issue where your iPhone shuts down when it has 50% battery left, that's because it's damaged and the battery cells can't draw the maximum current anymore.
And so that's what was happening for people that were seeing the random iPhone shutdowns. The processor was requesting too much power beyond what the battery could actually provide in that instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, he was saying from that point of view, that is kind of reasonable to make sure the battery lasts as long as possible. But, of course, Apple didn't communicate this to their users, and now it's in some hot water.
Let me jump in right there.
Please.
Because that is the point. Like there are two aspects to this. One is that Apple solved a problem, which is iPhones shutting down seemingly randomly, but of course it's not random. But
right,
shutting down when they were drawing too much power for a There's a verb I'm looking for. Not decrepit, not decayed even. There's a word for like when a battery has lost some of its efficiency. Oh my God. It's post-holiday. Mid-holiday can't think. Anyway, Apple solved this problem in a very, very clever way. And then Apple went and shoved its foot up its own derriere all the way up to its hip by not telling us what it was doing. Right. And I will not countenance Apple getting a pass on its failure to communicate here. Right. This is important because Apple needs to not do this again. And part of the reason why Apple needs to not do this again is because it feeds this false narrative that has existed for years that Apple intentionally slows down old iPhones to make us upgrade them, which is just ridiculous.
You know, you'd think with Apple knowing that people had been feeling, because there's the truthiness aspect, that they were intentionally slowing down iPhones for years. Mm-hmm. That with something like this, they would want to avoid creating the perception that that's exactly what they were doing.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is that is like, you know, it's backed up by Andrew's piece here, where this, from a science standpoint, what Apple has done is really clever. Apple should be getting lots of kudos for the solution that it found on how to deal with decaying batteries. It just needed to tell us. It just needed to tell us so that we could be talking about how clever it is instead of why it is that Apple made this huge mistake, or, you know, for the Apple haters out there, you know, how Apple is slowing down old iPhones.
Yeah, and what we have is a situation where Apple, yes, they found a very clever way to extend the useful life of iPhones and help people to avoid having to replace them quite so soon. So, yeah.
Well, to be fair, they could just replace the battery.
They could just replace a battery, yes. But if you don't want to replace a battery and you don't want to replace your iPhone, then you can still continue using it because Apple came up with this clever
thing. Well, let me throw in an added wrinkle here. And this is what I have no evidence of this. And I hope that it's not the case. But I do fear that one reason why Apple didn't tell us what it was doing is because Apple was trying to avoid the necessity of replacing batteries when at their cost. I hope that that's not the reason.
I would be surprised if that's the reason, because I'm assuming because of the age of the devices, for many people, they would not be under warranty anyhow.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not for everybody. There are people out there with newer devices who, for a variety of reasons, the way they use them, the way they charge them, they do have decayed battery.
Yep.
Capacity.
So, but now we have a better idea about the science behind what Apple did. They need to work on their communication, and hopefully, we won't see them make this same anti-transparency. How about opaqueness mistake? We won't see make this opaqueness. Well,
this, yeah, this wasn't even opaque. They just didn't tell us. It's like people. This took sleuthing by like one party said something, and another party goes, "Huh, let's look at the numbers." Right.
And, so I mean, and then this Apple's wasn't like, even "Oh opaque. Yeah, funny story."
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I mean. This is just, it's a self-imposed black eye. It's like, you know, Apple ran itself into the doorknob. I shouldn't make that joke because of how that phrase gets used, but it's just, I don't know. This is just ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. Apple should not have allowed this to be the topic of conversation.
Well, Brian, since I can tell that this kind of triggers you, I'm going to try and find a way to help bring you back down. How about if I talk some about what I see as some of the best apps for the iPad for 2017?
Let me lie back in the bathtub and
yeah,
get this going.
All right. Well, I'll start with one of my absolute favorites for the year, which is Affinity Photo. And Affinity Photo is the iPad version of the same app that you get on the Mac. And when I say the same app, I really mean that. So the same desktop image editing features that you have on the Mac, you get in the iPad version. So it's having a pro level photo and image editor right on your iPad with an interface that works right for touch. And it even works with Apple Pencil. So I've been able to sit down and do the same masking and cropping and color adjustments on my iPad that I do on my Mac. And it's like crazy just how useful this is. And it's a $14.99 app on the iPad. So it has been one of those apps that I have found that I just absolutely have to have on my iPad. That's why it's one of my top picks for this year. So
that's super cool.
It's very cool. So I have a couple other I'm going to toss out, and both are utilities that you and our listeners may or may not have heard of yet, because I don't think I've really talked about them much before. The first one is called Zipped. And what it does is it addresses what I see as a shortcoming with iOS, which is compressing files. So there are different apps that you can get that handle decompressing, like zip files. But if you need to compress something to send to someone, you don't have a native tool on the iPad for that. And Zipped fixes that problem. So you can just add files to the app, and then it automatically zips them, and then you can send them off wherever you want them to go. And you can use it in conjunction with Files, the Files app. So it's a one-trick pony, but it's a very slick and elegant one-trick pony. And I've even done the drag and drop thing with Files, and it just works really well. So it's a 99-cent app. And then there's Yoink, which is the iPad version of a Mac app that lets you drag files into like a holding pen on the edge of your screen. So on my Mac, I use it, and I throw files in there. I throw text clips and stuff in there, and then I can hop over to the app or the window where I need to take all this stuff that I've put or collected from various locations and then put them in the one place I want them to be, just as a group, or just pick off one at a time what I want to take out. And the iPad version works in a very similar way. So I can select content from different apps on my iPad, have it all in this repository, and then switch to the app that I want to be working in with all this content. And instead of having to do this back and forth thing with lots of apps, I've got the one app that open that I want plus Yoink. So I do it in split screen mode. And now I have all that content there. And it's just wonderfully handy for me. And that's a $2.99 app and totally worth the cost. So Zipped and Yoink. If you have an iPad and you're using it for like real production stuff, you should pop both of these on there. And I kind of want to put you guys on the spot and see if you have a favorite iPad app that you want to toss out. And Brian, I'll put you on the spot first.
Okay. First of all, can I take a brief time out to go songs? Just because you were saying yoink. So, yoink.
I see what you did there.
Just, you know, that's that associate of mine I've got. Right. So I'm going to make, I have, all right, Civilization VI. Mm-hmm. It's a game. And we're going to be doing a separate list of cool games that came out, or the most important and the best games that came out for the iPad. But I think that Civilization VI should also get a mention just for being an important app, because I mean, this is the fullest gaming experience yet to come to the iPad, and it is the full Mac and PC version of this game, at least the original version of this game. Mm-hmm. pre expansion packs. Mm-hmm. But they did it with an interface for, you know, a touch interface. They rejiggered the interface. They brought this full gaming experience to the iPad, and that's pretty astounding.
So I know I'm understanding what you're saying, but I'm going to rephrase it just to make sure I'm really understanding. What they did was they took the full PC game and figured out how to put it on the iPad with a touch interface.
Yes. And there aren't any compromises. It's similar to Rome Total War, mm-hmm. which was also brought to the iPad. I think that was early this year. Time sometimes flies. It might have been late last year. Rome Total War, though, is a much older game, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Rome Total War is many years old, whereas Civilization VI came out in 2016. And it's the full thing. And so, like, you know, on the one hand, it says so much about the power of an iPad. But it also, I think it very much legitimizes the iPad as a full gaming device. Now, admittedly, you're probably not going to want to start doing, I don't think first person shooters are going to be, fans are going to be, you know, abandoning their PCs to start playing them on an iPad, because those really do work really well with mouse and keyboard. Mm-hmm. But, the import of Civilization VI to me is that it's, we've got this game. It's the same as it is on Mac and PC. It's the full thing. I've been playing it, and it's the real deal. And I just think that's hugely important.
Now, am I remembering the pricing correctly? You can actually download and play the game for free, and it's full featured. But then, if you want the it's like the rest of the levels, then you pay.
You get your first 60 turns. For free. It's a free download. It's 3.1 gigs to download it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, make sure you're on Wi-Fi if you're going to download it.
No kidding.
And, but if you want to go past 60 turns, you're going to have to pay for the full version. Now, that's where there's a little bit of controversy. I think misplaced controversy, but, you know, to each their own. The full game is priced at $60, which is the same price that it costs on the Mac.
Okay.
That'll probably be coming down with time, but for now it's $60, same price it is on the Mac, but it was introduced at $30. So, you know,
so it's on sale right now for half price.
For half price, yeah. And which means, in my opinion, if you think you're going to play this game, go buy it. So you download it and then go in and buy the game, because it's an in-app purchase.
So, yeah. So buy it now so you get it for half price.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Andrew, do you have an iPad app that really stands out for you this year?
So I'm a big user of Reddit. Mm-hmm. I'm on it all the time. And a couple months ago, a Reddit app came out called Apollo. And it has a beautiful design and really great features. So if any of our listeners use Reddit, I definitely recommend Apollo.
Okay, and I remember your review that you wrote about this, and my takeaway was that the developer came up with a much better interface for interacting with Reddit than Reddit did themselves.
Yeah, so he said that's the main reason he created the app, was because he noticed other Reddit apps, even Reddit's official app, they kind of either don't have a great interface, or they maybe use the same interface across iOS and Android. Mm-hmm. So when he created his app, he made sure it adhered really close to Apple's design guidelines.
Cool. All right. And Apollo, as I recall, it's a iPhone and iPad app. Right.
Yeah.
And that's actually the same with Zipped and Yoink. So even though there are iPad picks for us, there are the companion iPhone interfaces.
Yoinks.
Yeah, I'm going to throw you another Scooby snack, Brian. Yeah. And as I recall, Apollo's like a couple dollars. That's it. Does that sound about right?
So I looked it up, and Apollo is actually free.
Oh, sweet.
And Yeah, but there's a pro version that so there are different price levels for it. You do it by giving a tip instead of, you know, one price that fits everyone. So the okay. lowest price is $3. Mm-hmm. And if you're feeling very generous, the highest tip you can give is $20.
Okay, so the more valuable the app is to you, the more you should tip.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Cool. All right, well, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for being here today. And Brian must have fallen asleep. I shouldn't have thrown him that extra Scooby snack.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I was going to ask if you, are glad you had me even with the Scooby sound effects.
Yeah,
or the Shaggy sound effects.
I'm glad you're here in spite of the Shaggy
okay, sound all right. effects. Honestly, keeping it 100. That's great.
Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you here. And listeners, I'm so glad that you were here today. Thank you for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow. We'll be right back.